scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Gasper!
And Murray.
Hey, all right. From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it is Gasper and Murray here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, Chris.
What's happening? Technical difficulties.
Oh, yep.
There it is.
Okay.
All yep. right.
No, though, the light was on, but the mic wasn't on.
This radio is a fickle mistress sometimes.
Yes, it really is. Yes, in this made-for-television studio.
Yeah, so when we last met, the Red Sox hadn't even played Game 1 of the ALCS. The series starts off with the ugly loss last Saturday night. Chris Sale kind of looks like a shell of himself. Wheel of Gutless Bums is spinning there late in the innings there. And didn't look very good for the way it began for the Boston Red Sox against the Houston Astros. I had stupidly picked the Red Sox to lose in five games to Houston. A lot of people, even the national talking heads, taking the Houston Astros, the reigning World Series champions in this series. Since that game, Chris, they salvage a split in Boston. The Astros get caught for cheating. Alex Bregman pokes the bear with a stupid Instagram post. Houston's pitching staff turns into a walk-throwing disaster. And the Red Sox not only sweep Houston in the three games that they play on the road, they mostly dominate them. Oh, and David Price kills the narrative that he's a perpetual postseason puddle by winning Game 5. And not just winning Game 5, it wasn't fluky. He was dominant as well. Not to mention the Patriots and Kansas City Chiefs play the most entertaining game in the NFL this season. We'll do football in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll obviously open with the Red Sox, who are on to the World Series, Game 1 Tuesday night, either against the Dodgers or the Brewers. Your thoughts from Game 1 on and how this whole thing has played out since we last met.
Well, I think you just sort of hit on it there. I mean, the biggest thing is you're looking at a team that had only won one postseason game the last two postseasons, and they've only lost two on their way to the World Series. It looks like a completely different team with primarily the same guys. Obviously, look, J.D. Martinez is huge. He's a huge addition to this team. You see that with the home run. You see the way he's affected guys and their approach to the game. But I have to sort of give it to Red Sox ownership and Dave Dombrowski, because I think there was a lot of derision back in spring training, especially when John Henry gave that press conference hours before they signed J.D. Martinez. And at that point, J.D. Martinez wasn't a member of the team. And John Henry said, well, we made significant changes. And people were like, what? What changes? What are you talking about? All you did was change the manager. Well, doesn't it kind of feel like all they really needed to do for the most part was change the manager? I mean, again, J.D. Martinez would have helped no matter who the manager was. I don't deny that. But they look like a completely different team with mostly the same guys. Like Jackie Bradley Jr. now is Mr. October. Coming into the postseason, this postseason, he had struck out in half of his postseason at bats leading into this.
So I'm glad to hear you say this. It sounds to me like you think that the bigger factor here has been Alex Cora.
Yeah.
And obviously, look at the numbers.
Look at the way he's navigated the eighth inning. They have no eighth inning guy. It doesn't matter.
J.D. Martinez has obviously made the difference in this team's offense and throughout the season. You can make a case for him from the MVP. But of the two, I think Alex Cora has been the difference maker here with this team this season. Because like you said, it's mostly the same personnel.
Yeah.
Look where you're getting out of Jackie Bradley Jr. this postseason. Look at the year that Xander Bogaerts had. And you know that Bogaerts, from some of the things you read and hear, mostly despised John Farrell.
Yeah.
So Alex Cora has been the difference maker.
It feels that way to me. It really does. And that was what the Red Sox were going for. And look, they were in a tough situation in terms of they couldn't really turn over their roster. They had so much invested both in terms of prospect capital and actual capital in this roster and bringing in Sale and signing these guys that you didn't want to rip it up. And they sort of gambled a little bit to say, okay, you know, we can't change the horse, so we're going to change the jockey. And it's made a huge difference. You see, like I even go back to this. Do you remember early in the year when Cora chirped at Luis Severino post game?
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, so after they beat the Yankees and somebody asked Porcello about CeCe and he chirped back at CeCe, to me, it was like, okay, that's happening because Cora's there. Like this team now, this team has a little bit of grit and this team has a little bit of, you know, sort of FU to it. And I think that comes from Cora. You know, I think he's changed the entire culture of that clubhouse. And you sort of know how I feel about managing in baseball. I think, especially in today's day and age, where everybody has the analytics and everybody goes to the bullpen, that a lot of it is about creating the right culture with your team. It's less about the strategy.
There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, especially
with
the
nerds.
Yeah,
because I think that stuff's like kind of, you know, mandated for the most part. Although every once in a while you get some creativity like Terry Francona in 2016. And I'd say the way Coors navigated not having a real eighth inning guy this year. But the most important thing, and this is what I thought Terry Francona was great at when he was here, Jim, was creating an environment, especially in a market like Boston, where guys can succeed. And I think he's done that this year much better than Manager John did previously. I mean, you know, Price, that's what he used to call Manager John. And then after they clinched game five against Houston, saying there should be a column for manager wins and that Alex Coors should get credit for these wins. The guy that referred to the previous manager as Manager John, yeah. Ask Manager John, now is throwing bouquets at the feet of his manager. That tells you how much it's changed.
Well, and this is why I've been, and I think others have too, been so frustrated with this team, at least leading into this postseason, or why people like myself looked at the 108 wins and they kind of felt hollow. It's because they were underachievers under Farrell. They really were. You could see what the talent was, and it's just like, okay, you can't get out of your own way. And it feels like, okay, ultimately Farrell was a big part of the problem here, because this run that they've been on here the last couple of weeks is ridiculous. And I said it on NBC Sports Boston last night, said it with Felger and Maz last couple of days. I'm eating these L's. You want to get your rotten tomatoes and throw them at me if you see me on these streets too, I understand. I mocked this team. I mocked the win total. I had an asterisk on them up until that sweep of the Yankees at the beginning of August. I was very magnanimous. I removed the asterisk then. I've obviously been extremely hard on David Price. I'll eat these L's. I'll continue to eat these L's. They're the best team in baseball. The 108 wins hold up. And what they did in this series is phenomenal.
I mean, they dominated. You know, and we talked last week, right? And, you know, I said it was a 50-50 series, and I picked the Astros in seven.
I mean, the Astros in five.
The Red Sox dominated the series. I mean, think about what they've done. They're 5-0 on the road in the postseason. They hadn't won a game on the road in the postseason the prior to playoffs. So it's like completely different. I mean, to have the temerity and to have the mental fortitude to go into somebody else's house, and these just aren't regular teams. We're talking about the 100-win Yankees and the 103-win Astros, and to go into their stadiums and dominate them, that does tell you something about this team. I will say this, though, for people like you, and look, I'm taking some L's too. I always go back to the Bill Parcells quote, and it's that when you look at things and you break them down, confidence is solely the result of demonstrated ability. That was the whole theme this entire season for this team. I don't think that really, like, it's the job of fans to have blind faith. But if you're looking at it the way we look at it, you needed to see this postseason to feel the way that people feel right now about this team. They had to prove that. Like, it's easy for, as a fan, to go in with blind faith all the time. But if you were really objective about it, didn't this team need to show you this before you could sort of anoint them everything we're anointing them now?
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's more than fair, and I understand fans' frustration with that. But yes, because again, based on the talent and the way that they, you know, you have one win in the postseason the last couple of years and that embarrassing sweep of the hands of that Cleveland team, who you were, at least on paper, you still had David Ortiz, you were better then, and to get swept by them, like, it's just, it's been so frustrating to watch them up until this point. David Price, did he kill the narrative?
Yeah, he did. He totally did. And so to me, he's sort of the poster child for the whole thing. I mean, I mentioned, again, you're throwing bouquets at the feet of the manager when the other one he derisively referred to as Manager John. I just look at the way Coors changed the narrative for the entire team, and I think Price is the poster boy for that. He had confidence in him in this clinching game. Price went out there and rewarded it and was lights out and got the win. And not only did he get the win, it's the win that sends the Red Sox back to the World Series. In a lot of ways, it reminded me of John Lackey in 2013 and that sort of redemption song. You know, Lackey being on the mound for the clincher at Fenway Park in that series. It was sort of reminiscent of that. And I think he did. I think he did kill the narrative. Now, look, are we suddenly going to sit here and say he's Curt Schilling? No, you need to see a little more of that. But as he said after that game, you know, he doesn't anticipate having to answer that question again. You know, you've never won in the postseason. One in whatever. One in 15 in the postseason, if that's what it ends up being as a star or whatever it is, that's not good, but it's still better than 0 for whatever. He's not 0-4 anymore. He's shown that he can do it. He busted that narrative.
Yeah, and going into, so for every start he's ever made up until game five, Chris, you know, I thought it was an automatic loss. You can put the L on the board before he even throws the first pitch, and it mostly looked like that. And I thought game two was wildly overrated by a lot of people. Okay, he didn't suck in the fourth inning, and he didn't end up getting the win. You see him MF'ing into his glove, and it felt like he might have been pulled a little bit prematurely, so I can understand the frustration there. But going into game five, how it all set up, Andrew Benintendi making the ridiculous catch the night before, I'd never been more confident. That was the biggest lock I could feel in terms of gambling on sports since Pekka Rinne puked in Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final against Pittsburgh because he can't win there a couple of years ago. I knew David Price was going to win that game. I knew it. I didn't care if Justin Verlander, who's been the best postseason pitcher the last decade plus, on the mound. Price was winning that game. It was set up for him. They're up 3-1. They're playing with house money. They got all the juju, and he goes out there and dominates. I couldn't have been more confident. And as I said yesterday in Felger and Mez, I mean it. Good for him. Good for him for killing the narrative. And I think the only way to go from here for him is up. The only thing that could really like send him backwards again is say the World Series goes 7 games and, you know, he comes out of the bullpen in a relief position and, you know, blows game 7. Then I think it's back to, oh boy, David Price is a postseason choker. But he killed it. He did kill that narrative.
I agree that he did. And I heard Maz sort of say, no, he has to win like the next one. It's like, no, the whole thing was this player's incapable of succeeding in the postseason as a starter. He just succeeded in the postseason as a starter. So, yeah, if he loses the next one, you say, okay, yeah, bad start. But it's not like before where everything was in a position where it just seemed like it was sort of compounding, right? You know, everyone just reinforced the narrative. Now it's like, well, that's just a postseason loss, the same as the one, same as the L that Verlander took the other night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the difference. They're not reinforcing a perception of a guy not being able to get the job done. It goes back to every decision he has from here on out in the postseason is just a decision.
All right. If you want to join us, we're going to open up spending this first hour here in the Red Sox. Then we do the Sports Hub Celtics show at noon. And then the 1 o'clock hour, it's about the Patriots because, you know, their game against Kansas City, the most entertaining game of the year. And I think they have a bit of a tough spot coming up here tomorrow against the Chicago Bears. So a lot to get to. You want to join us, 617-779-0985. But the first hour on the World Series bound Red Sox. Who are they going to play? Dodgers, Brewers, we'll find that out tonight. And Chris, I want to get your thoughts on who you think might be the better matchup as well. It's Gasper and Murray here on a Saturday morning. It's 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And a strikeout for Price. Called strike 3. David Price has excellent command to start. 2 outs. Price deals. And it's a called strike 3. The swing and a miss. David Price spots that fastball on the inside corner again. He picks up his 5th strikeout. And he got him. That is strikeout number 8. Mariznick right off the end of the bat. Price fields it. Throws it low. Dug out. And it's in time. What a play. Price over to first base and the Gold Glover Mitch Moreland. David Price is through 5. And a swing and a miss. It's his 9th strikeout for David Price. And I'm sure David Price has mountains and mountains of crow to dish out because he finally has his moment as a starter. 6 innings, no runs, and his first career postseason win sends the Red Sox to the World Series.
You've said that it doesn't matter what you do in the regular season. All that matters is how you perform on this grand stage in the postseason. Does pitching your team to the World Series sound like enough?
Not yet, no. Not for me. You know, not for the other guys in the clubhouse. You know, we got 4 more wins. That was very, very special. Absolutely, but we want more.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Told you on Thursday with Felger and Mez, was set up for Price to get his first postseason win. No real pressure, up 3-1 on the road, minimal expectations for the guy that night. They're playing with house money, and he went out and he was nails. He was. And I put that sound together with Nine Inch Nails' Piggy, for those of you paying attention, for a reason. And not just because I saw them at the Wang last night, and they're there tonight, too. If you didn't know that, go. They're great. So there's lyrics in that song that go, nothing can stop me now, because I don't care anymore. And that's what I think clicked for David Price. He talked about finding something in the bullpen in game 4 the night before. What he found? He unburdened himself. Finally, after all these years and all the postseason failures, he clicked. I think he realized, too, with the short rest, and that they were up 3-1, Chris, he unburdened himself. Like, what am I doing? Why have I been psyching myself out here? I don't care about this anymore. I'm just going to rely on my talent. Or what I also think might have happened is because the Astros were so shook at that point, he looked across into the opposing dugout, and he saw himself normally and how shaken up that those guys were and like, ugh, how rattled they were. And that's how I normally look. I don't feel that bad. I definitely don't feel like how the Astros feel. I'm just going to go out there and fling it. And he did. And he dominated. So I'm not here to like gloat about the prediction, because again, I told you so. I knew he was going to win that game. It's to say congratulations to David Price and for him to finally unburden himself, because that's what it is. I don't think he found anything in terms of his pitches, or there was some sort of little hitch in his giddy up or anything like that, Chris.
He did have a little more velocity, though, Jim.
Yeah, I think that all comes from in between his ears.
Okay.
He realized, this is stupid.
He also worked inside.
I'm so extremely talented here, but I think that he just the burden of the pressure of the postseason and having to perform, like, he's obviously a very cerebral guy.
Yeah.
I think it clicked. Nothing can stop me now because I don't care anymore. It's how many ways in life, you know, this is why they always say one of the most difficult things for people to do is to speak in front of a crowd. You know why? Because you psych yourself out. When you're a young man and you go out of the bars and, you know, maybe you're a little bit awkward. And yes, I'm projecting here because this was me. You start to try to talk to women. If you think about it too much, how's that usually go?
Not
failure
well.
After failure after yeah. failure. You're sweating. You're a mess. Just go. Be natural. And sure, it comes with experience. And how experienced is David Price? I think it just clicked, just like that, all of a sudden. And again, I think a lot of it had to do with the fact 3-1, house money, they're
sure.
dominating on
yeah.
the road. I'm just going to go out there and fling it. And that's what he did, and he went out and won, and he finally unburdened himself. So good for him.
I'll tell you what you're saying is somewhat reflected in the way he pitched, because all of a sudden he was challenging those guys inside, and he wasn't worried about something leaking over the plate.
No nibbling.
Exactly, and being sent 400 feet. You know, he was challenging with the fastball inside and then the changeups away. And so he was aggressive. He attacked, and it worked out. And, you know, you have to be happy for the guy. You know, I really am happy for David Price that he doesn't have to deal with this. And I've said this repeatedly on this show. Whether you like David Price or not, I've always felt if you're a Red Sox fan, ultimately, you got to root for that guy, because the success of your team is tied to his success.
Yeah.
You know, the way your team is built, you need that guy to be successful to ultimately win it. Like, the idea that they could win the World Series without getting a playoff win from him as a starter, to me, was always absurd. And even he would feed into it saying, well, I don't care, you know, as long as we win. It's like, no. For what you want to happen, you got to win. And he just did.
Well, especially with what's going on with Chris Sale. And it felt like, okay, so if there was a game six, he was slated to pitch tonight.
Yeah.
But I don't know how confident I would have been in that. But overall, it's just part of the narrative of the 2018 Bizarro Red Sox. That's what I've now dubbed them. They had the beards in 2013. You had the, what I want to call them, the a-holes in 2004. But they were the idiots
yeah,
in 2004.
Idiots,
and that 2017 was just a wagon. But they're the Bizarro Red Sox. And I call them that because, again, David Price wins a postseason game and dominates in it. You're getting production from the bottom of the order. The much maligned bullpen and guys like
Brazier
and Matt Barnes have been great. Jackie Bradley. It's up is down, down is up. Jackie Bradley Jr. has turned into Reggie Jackson. Cats and dogs living it together.
It's the upside down, Jim.
It is. It's the Bizarro Red Sox. And the
Stranger Things Red Sox.
Yeah, it's I don't care if it's the Dodgers or the Brewers, Chris. I think that they should win that series in five games. They're an absolute buzzsaw right now. And I'm sure, look, the Dodgers have better pitching, although they certainly didn't have that last night.
I worry about some of those, you know, they have those lefties. They have good left-handed pitching. The other thing is that the Dodgers hit left-handed pitching. So if you know, during the regular season, they hit 67 home runs against lefties, which was third most in Major League Baseball. So if you're two top pitchers are Sale and Price, that might factor in.
Yeah, MLB obviously wants the Dodgers. That's the sexier matchup.
Yeah.
They're bigger markets.
Yep.
I think you, as the Red Sox fan, you should want the Brewers for myriad reasons. One, if you want to travel for the games, it's obviously easier, even if you just fly into Chicago, 90-minute ride to go to Milwaukee. They feel like a lamb, kind of like the 2007 Colorado Rockies. Like, it's more of like a cute story, it feels like. And there's some good hitters there, obviously.
Yeah, Christian Yelich, MVP season.
Yeah, Moustakas has been there before when he was with the Royals.
Lorenzo Cain's a great player.
So, okay, they have some players. It's not like they're a complete pushover. But how about the sports schadenfreude aspect of it, huh? How many of you really just want to yell at Felger, or you're tired of his crap? Let me tell you, sitting in here in the studio when he's watching some of these games of the NLCS that have been on in the afternoon, the man lives and dies with this team. He's into it. Like, you know, yelling on air at times if they're getting a big out or getting a big hit. Don't you want to root against Felger? Huh? How is that? Felger versus Boston?
Yeah.
That's fun. Huh?
The Travis Shaw angle, just, you know, what happens? Does he come back to hunt?
Right.
Dombrowski. So there's a lot of interesting,
a lot of good storylines there, yeah, too.
Also, Bud Selig used to own that team, so that makes it easy to root against.
Yeah, who doesn't like Bernie Brewer coming down the slide, too?
Yeah. They do. I will say this for the Brewers. That old school Brewers logo is one of the sweetest logos.
Oh, amazing.
The MB that forms the glove, that's genius.
Quickly want to mix in the Tyler, some of the calls. So let's go to Tyler in the car. You're first up here on Gaspar and Mari this morning. What do you think about David Price and his performance?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
You know, one of the biggest things I noticed the other night watching that game is that's one of the first real times I've seen David Price show, like, true emotion and just stones rather than kind of arrogance and excuses. I felt like that, you know, his performance was, obviously it was dominant, but his post-game speech was the first time you really ever saw him show emotion for himself about his accomplishments rather than, like, trying to argue a way through a situation. I felt like the way he talked about the team, and when the reporter asked him if it was enough, his first response was no. I mean, he acknowledged what a big moment it was for him in his career and obviously that monkey on its back. But I think he made it so clear to the Boston fan base and just to his teammates that the only thing that matters to him is those four more wins. And for me as a Boston fan, I mean, the amount of times I felt like the only thing David Price...
I'm going to lost you on that. I liked that too, though. So, that, you know, still eyes on the prize here. He realizes it wasn't just about him and finally, you know, getting that proverbial monkey off his back. And you could tell he sounded even like a different guy. And you could feel the relief was off of him. He was relieved and the pressure was off of him. And credit to Alex Cora on that too, and keeping these guys focused. Again, good for him. And obviously I've been as hard as anybody else on David Price here for the last couple of years. But serious balls on this group. You know, it's proven with his performance, how they dominated Houston here on the road. And I mean that. Good for David Price. Guy's taking a beating. And now is not the time for me to be defiant and say, well, you still got something to prove. We'll save that for Adam Jones at night here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. We'll continue to talk to Red Sox heading to the World Series. Game one, Tuesday night. I want to know, Chris, if there's still anybody that you might have any concerns about. Because me, as confident as I feel in this group right now, still feel a little bit shaky with Craig Kimbrell. And Chris Sale, your confidence in him. So we'll touch on that coming back. First, though, let's get caught up with the Sports Hub headlines with Mike Sarge Riley. It's Gaspar Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Sports Hub headlines.
Kyrie Irving and the Celtics lost their first game of the young season to the Toronto Raptors last night, 113-101.
When is it? When isn't it? I mean, you know, those type of games you want to be a part of as a competitor, honestly. And, you know, it was a great test for us. Came up short. Another one in less than 24 hours.
21 points for Kyrie Irving on the tough opponent there at Toronto. Kawhi Leonard had a game-high 31 points for the Raptors in the win last night. Celtics right back at it tonight. They'll be at Madison Square Garden against the Knicks. And we'll have the call from John Wallach and Cedric Maxwell starting at 7 o'clock right here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Bruins also continue their road trip tonight in Vancouver against the Canucks. Jent Sirott and Bob Beers will have the broadcast starting at 10 o'clock right here on the Bruins Radio Network. 98.5 The Sports Hub, driven by the award-winning Honda CRV. All right, I was talking about Khalil Mack there a minute ago, but he is officially questionable for the Chicago Bears tomorrow with an ankle injury, as the Patriots are in the Windy City. But for the Patriots, 10 players are questionable for this game. Julian Edelman, Josh Gordon, Rob Gronkowski, and Sony Michel among those. Kickoff tomorrow, 1 o'clock from Soldier Field. And the Red Sox still waiting to find out their opponent in the World Series. He'll actually have a workout today over at Fenway Park. Game 7 of the National League Championship Series tonight from Miller Park in Milwaukee. The Brewers and the Dodgers last night, Milwaukee winners 7-2 against L.A. Headlines are brought to you by Kiel Vodka, the first American-made premium light vodka. Smoother, lighter, better-tasting vodka with only 58 calories per serving. Kiel Vodka, stay balanced. I'm Mike Riley, I'm Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Your next update in 30 minutes.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Bases loaded, clearing double, and a grand slam last night. And a high drive, way back. Jackie Bradley Jr. sends it out of here, and Boston is back on top. A majestic home run for JBJ. How about 9 two-out RBIs in his last 3 games? And the Red Sox are in the lead.
Now we have an MVP award to give out. He is arriving on stage. is Jackie Bradley Jr., and he is your ALCS MVP. Please, take this. This is for you, my friend. Congratulations.
It's an honor. It's an honor. There's a lot of guys in this clubhouse who's deserving of it. And, you know, everyone was pretty much hands-on. That's what it was going to take in order to beat a great team like Houston.
Jackie Bradley Jr., he's the man. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. He is the ALCS MVP thanks to his three hits in the series. Delivered 9 runs, the biggest, I think. The home run coming in game 4. 2-run home run, putting the Red Sox up 5-4 and the Astros at that time. This is another guy, Chris, that's shoved it in the faces of doubters this postseason. I've been a strong doubter of Jackie Bradley Jr., no doubt about that. Yes, the defense is real, the offense, but if you want to make even a stronger statistical case for him, to shove it in the face of doubters like myself and Adam Jones, nights here on 98.5 of Sports Hub since June 23rd, JBJ batted a solid enough 282. So, hey, another guy, good for him. How does Alex Cora handle Jackie Bradley Jr., though, in the World Series? Does he sit him? If it's Los Angeles, he keep him in for the defense with a big outfield there. So now here's where it gets interesting, especially, you know, so I think he really will have a tougher decision if it is the Dodgers, what to do with Jackie Bradley Jr., and thoughts on how he played in this ALCS.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he had, you know, the 3 huge hits in the series and the 9 RBIs, and they stand out because they're 2-out hits and they were game-changing hits. But you still go back and look at what he did in the LCS. And again, it was great. And, you know, he deserved that MVP award, but he batted 200. And so if I get to the World Series and I'm facing Rich Hill and I'm facing Clayton Kershaw and Hyunjin Ryu, those guys, if I'm facing all those guys, I sit him. And then I'll bring him in later for defense. I know he's sort of swinging a hot bat now, but when I look at the other guys, Benintendi, Betts, Martinez, I mean, Martinez can't sit. This is a sort of crazy off-the-board thing, but I like the creativity that Cora has shown. Would you ever consider playing Mookie Betts at second base?
I know your colleague Dan Shaughnessy tweeted this yesterday. Yeah. We took some
calls. I didn't know that, to be honest.
Yeah,
I've been kind of out of the mix.
We took some calls on this. I wouldn't be stunned, but, you know, Maz said, has Alex Cora really done anything that unorthodox this season, playing anyone kind of out of position? I mean, okay, so Blake Swihart at first, and I think he played third a little bit at one point.
Wasn't there games for Mookie, you know, because they were down guys? Didn't he play second base this year?
Truthfully, I can't recall, but I'll take your word for it. So, I'm into it because I think you want to have Jackie Bradley Jr. in simply because of how hot he's been. I wouldn't put it past Alex Cora. You know, it's all hands on deck. Guys got to do what the hell they got to do now.
I mean, you can't really.
You just need 4 more here.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. Kinsler's been okay. You know, Nunez is really hurt. Holt had the cycle game against the Yankees, game 3 of that series. But, I mean, if you want to put the best lineup out there, and Mookie's such a great athlete. I mean, the only reason Mookie got moved off second base was because the organization was just, like, so stubborn about Pedroia. And Pedroia was obviously healthier back then and a different player, but, you know, that was the deal. I mean, Mookie drafted as a shortstop, was coming up playing mostly second base. Let me put it like this. If the Brewers can use Travis Shaw at second base, which they've done at times this year,
yeah,
then I think Mookie Betts could play second base if you want to get creative about it.
Any concerns? I mean, obviously, they're hot as a pistol right now, and I have them in a sweep or 5 games at most, whether it's the Dodgers or the Brewers. But any guys you're still maybe nervous about? Chris Sale, we haven't seen him now for a week, and his last out in game 1 of the ALCS, he did not look good. And Craig Kimbrell continues to look real shaky. So concerns about those two or anywhere else with this team right now?
Yeah, sure. I'll answer that in a second. I'll just say, I just looked this up. Jackie Bradley Jr., you know, this year against lefties, 185, 562 OPS, you know, so versus, you know, left-handed pitching. So when you look at that, wouldn't that tell you that if it's Kershaw or if it's Hill or Ryu, that you got to think about sitting him?
Yeah.
Guys I'm concerned about, I would say this. I think that Alex Cora has been very careful about the situations he's put Matt Barnes in. I thought the other night it was a quick hook. It was like, okay, we're not going to let this get away. And that's because Barnes is a guy that tends to put traffic on the bases. Now, he tends to get out of it most of the time, but he does tend to put some traffic on the bases. So if I had to say, like, who I'm concerned about, I would start with the bullpen. Barnes, you know, Kimbrell, hopefully he found something. Eric Gagne, I guess, or whatever, texted Cora and said he's you know, tipping his pitches or whatever. I don't know. Hopefully that works. Prior to game five, he had been scored upon in his last five playoff appearances, so that wasn't really very good. And I'm concerned about Devers' defense. Offensively, you know, he's great. He's already proven at such a young age that he can deliver in the postseason, and his home run the other night. You can say whatever you want about the ballpark, but biggest blow of the game. But I still worry about his defense in a key situation.
And Chris Sale?
Yeah, you're right about Sale in terms of, you know, the health factor of it. I mean, this is just a, you know, wild sort of speculative theory here, but they haven't really said much about that stomach ailment. And I don't think he's just like he ate bad chicken. You know, there's a lot of guys, when you have a situation with inflammation and they're giving you those anti-inflammatory shots,
eats your stomach.
That
lining.
Stuff will destroy your stomach. And so that concerns me, because that tells me like he's just getting by. Like they're trying to just get him through this postseason with that anti-inflammatory stuff in that shoulder. But you're in the World Series. You know, he's had a nice long layoff here, and hopefully he can go out there and give him what he's given him before. I mean, really, what are you talking about? Two more starts?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, you talk about guys that can't afford to lose any weight, though, with the stomach ailment.
Well, and so Alex Cora, I think it might have been after game four. Yeah, it was after game four when he was asked, you know, when Sale was going to be starting, and he's, you know, slated him in theory for game six, and he had talked about how Sale had lost weight since he was admitted to MGH. He's already built like a popsicle stick. How can the man lose any more weight? But throwing on flat ground, feels like he's got he's got himself back. But the best thing is, as you mentioned, like now that they wrap this thing up in five games, well, they got all this extra time.
Yeah.
So again, more kudos to David Price for winning that game on Thursday night. Yeah. So I think there's less worry there. For me, it's Kimbrel. Kimbrel hasn't looked right for a while now.
Okay.
You know, he gets bailed up by Andrew Benintendi with that catch in game four, and we'll play that sound and talk a little bit more about that game, because that was the best game of the series and the most interesting.
Yeah, that was an incredible game.
And obviously some controversy there with the fan interference.
Oh, yeah, if you want to talk about I'll talk about that all day.
Yeah, so I want to touch on that. But, boy, Craig Kimbrel still looks a little he's the one guy I'm like, oh, God, no, I don't want to have to come down. As confident as I now feel in this team, because, look, it just looks like it's their year. It's the Bizarro Red Sox getting production up and, you know, up and down the lineup, especially at the bottom of the lineup. Guys like David Price winning games. Down is up. Up is down. Jackie Bradley Jr., he's Reggie Jackson. I'll keep saying it until I'm blue in the face, but Craig Kimbrel still looks like a bit of a weak link.
Can I add one guy I'm a little concerned about?
Sure.
And it might strike people as strange, but you know, Mookie Betts, he makes an impact in other ways. You know, that play to throw out Tony Kemp was incredible, and then the leaping catch he had the other night. But he's still batting .205 this postseason and still doesn't have a postseason home run. And this is a guy who is the presumptive MVP of the American League. So I'd like to see a little more production from him with the bat.
I'm glad we just got some, because after game one, Chris, he started, you know, there was this narrative, and I think it was, you know, right to be pointed out. Maz brought it up and wrote about it on our website, 98.5sportshub.com. He was looking like Alex Rodriguez in the postseason. Like, you put up these monster regular season numbers, and there's no production in the postseason. Like, what is this? Thankfully, he's broke through a little bit. But you're right.
I mean, he still doesn't have a home run. Isn't that kind of weird?
Yeah.
I mean, it still doesn't have a postseason home run. And I'm not just talking this postseason. I'm talking the last three postseasons. Zero home runs.
So Benintendi's catch, the fan interference, the cheating from the Houston Astros. Let's touch on all of that when we come back in our long commercial-free segment as we're talking to Red Sox here off of the World Series. Game one, Tuesday night, Fenway Park. Who's it going to be? Dodgers, Brewers. We'll talk more about the Sox and then get into the Sports Hub Celtics show at noon. It's Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Runners will be off of the crack of the bat with two outs. Kimbrel deals, Bregman in the air, left field. Benintendi dives, and he makes the catch! Oh, what a play! Game saver, Andrew Benintendi! The Red Sox win on a spectacular catch by Benintendi in left field. Wow. What a game. What a finish.
It's a really good team over there with really good pitching, good lineup. And to come in here, win three straight, win four straight, three at third place is, you know, a testament to the guys in our clubhouse, you know, everybody in this organization. And we're a very confident team, a very humble team. And I think that's what put us over the top.
So that was the best game, at least the most entertaining game of the ALCS, Game 4. That was Andrew Benintendi with that ridiculous catch to bail out shaky Craig Kimbrel. Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So let's touch on some of the stuff from that game, Chris. The catch, Did you, even if he happened to miss it, did you like the aggressiveness from Andrew Benintendi trying to make that play? Because I did. And, you know, it's easy to say, especially sitting in with Statler and Wardoff during the week. They say, we would have been all over. I'm like, okay, yeah, sure. But I like the stones showed by that were showed there by Andrew Benintendi trying to make that catch, because even if he let, I think most outfielders in that situation, Chris, they let the ball bounce, they let a run score, and thank God that that didn't happen, because again, Kimbrel had turned into a puddle, so he was on his way to blowing that game more than likely. I like that Benintendi, you know, took the initiative. He took out the little cheat sheet there prior to that. He moved a little bit, so he had the better angle, and he made a ridiculous play. I like that he took the initiative to try to make that play, even if he failed doing
so. Yeah, well, I mean, if he doesn't make that, there's two outs, so the runners are going on contact. So if he doesn't catch the ball, it's a tie game. And I think he knows that, and then that's sort of the risk-reward thing. Now, look, you know, I'd have to go back and watch it. I don't know how close Jackie Bradley Jr. would have been to sort of back him up to prevent the winning run from scoring. But you weigh the risk-reward of that, and I think it was the right decision. And I think you also sort of have to know what the... Now, I'd love to go back. I know they have it. Have you looked it up, or has anyone looked it up? What was the catch probability there?
Oh, I don't know.
I'd love to know that. Maybe we can get someone to look that up with all that stuff that they do with StatCast and all that. Because it seemed like he had like a really... I mean, it was a great catch, but it seemed like he had a beat on it from the start.
Well, he said,
I didn't think it was that much of a gamble.
He said he took his little cheat sheet out, you know, prior to the at-bat, and it told him to, you know, the card said, take a little bit, you know, move to the whatever the hell angle he had to go by just a couple of steps, and he said that that helped him to get a better jump on the play.
Yeah, because the angle he took, it wasn't like he was coming straight in. It was like he was sort of coming in almost like diagonal, and that's what you needed on that play, you know, to be able to come in there and get that ball. And you know, great grab, and it was just tremendous. I mean, one of the all-time, I think, postseason catches for the Boston Red Sox.
The fan interference in that game.
Yeah, I thought that was Joe West inserting himself in there. And I'll be honest with you. Look, I'm happy it worked out for the Red Sox. I thought that was 100% the incorrect call. I think,
really?
Yes, I thought in that situation, call it a home run, and then it can be reviewed because all the home runs are reviewed, and go from there. You have to be really sure. And just looking at the video after the fact, to me, it looks like Betts is reaching into the stands. And even if you don't believe me, go back and read Mookie's quote after the game. He talks about, yeah, and then I went over what? Over the fence? Okay, so once you go over the fence, there is no interference. That's Mookie. That's not me. You know, you can say whatever you want. We can all say we looked at it a different way. Mookie Betts, after the game, was quoted as saying, I went over.
Yeah.
So he's saying, he used the word over. He's like, you know, I'll try and find the quote, but it was like, and when I went over.
I just think, for me, the thing, and you know, I don't want to be a homer about it. I'm trying to be objective. I just think, like, okay, hypothetically speaking, take the fans out of it. I think Mookie Betts makes that play 10 times out of 10.
Oh, I agree.
And so if you want to say it's West inserting himself, okay, I just think what ended up happening there is that he gave Betts the benefit of the doubt of saying, okay, he would have made that play.
I agree.
He did have one of those fans. I think it was the chubby guy in the white shirt. Yeah. His hand was on the railing or on the, you know, the top of the field there. Yeah. So it did look like initially that the guy was trying to reach in and hit the glove or try to, you know, catch the ball, because that's the Pavlovian response for any fan. Ball, sure. Here come ball, want to catch ball, there's ball. Ugh. So I thought that the right, it's a 50-50 thing. Like, well, I could, if they called it home run, then it's going to be a home run. They call interference, it's going to be interference. They're not going to overturn it.
But here's the thing.
I thought the right call was made.
Are you asking me, was Mookie Betts interfered with? Absolutely. I agree. However, when you read the rule, the rule states that once you reach into the stands, there is no interference. I could dump a beer all over you, Jim, if you reach your glove into the stands. It doesn't exist once you reach in. And so I think that rule's written poorly, but if that's what the rule is, it wasn't applied correctly. And after the game, Joe West said repeatedly, the ball wasn't in the stands yet. The ball wasn't in the stands yet. You know, Mookie, he said Betts wasn't in the stands. Betts didn't have to go into the stands. I think he's wrong. I think Betts did have to go into the stands by his own admission. He said, when I went over what? What are you going over? The fence.
Yeah.
So, he, you know, Mookie leaped up thinking, I'm going over the fence. Mookie was over the fence. I'm glad it worked out for the Red Sox, but I just don't think any other umpire other than Cowboy Joe West calls it that way.
Robert in California, you're next here on Gasper Murray. Hello.
Morning, boys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, got a question. I tend to think my theory on what changed with Price was I think he had a heart-to-heart with his dog Astro, and I was wondering, Jim, if you might have been privy to that conversation, and maybe you could share with us what might have been said. Oh, I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure, Robert. Thanks for that.
Dance, Jim, dance.
Thanks. I'll dance for the people.
Hey, do you think I can go out there and finally kill that narrative?
Rah!
You're the best, Astro. I know you always believed in me. That's a good boy.
I'm a little bit foggy. I went to a show last night. It was a
I didn't know that.
Some of my best work.
No, that was pretty solid. I mean, you know, the impression is always spot on. I think
now it's just going to be less harsh. That's all because he, you know.
Yeah, but you know what you did there? The seasoned performer that you are, you padded it and created time for you to think with the barking.
Voice. Yeah.
You're very smart.
All right. So we will continue to take your Red Sox calls in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll talk a lot of Pats there, too. There's two. It's an embarrassment of riches right now for Boston sports fans, including the Celtics. Been paying attention. The NBA regular season has started. They've already played two games, including last night, kind of a rough loss to the Toronto Raptors. So we'll touch on that as we tip off the Sports Hub Celtics show next.